Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Start, bro.
It's like the beginning of a Lil Wayne song. Not a podcast with three white guys.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden, it will all become lovely. The flower that opens in the morning light.
Miss Katie, the last time we sat down with the man we have today for a Graining In episode, it was March 27th, 2020. And some of y'all may remember what was going on in March of 2000.
Yep.
Cam Bosch, welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for taking the time to sit down with us. How you been?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back. It's good to see both of you. I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Nothing to complain about.
Chilling, man. And yeah. I want to get this out of the way because, so you're recording from your house, which Jeff and I visited you, what, like around Labor Day last year?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I just want to put out a PSA for Pittsburgh. Like, Pittsburgh is fucking sick. And I have been saying that ad nauseum to anyone that will listen. I haven't really done anything since we did that other than work stuff. But like, if just say you have a weekend away, I would literally go visit you to see more of Pittsburgh. And I don't think I ever thought I'd say that. Mm. It's a great, it seems so walkable. Yeah. What's your experience been as someone that's jumped around a little bit, but you spent most of your time in Maine and Indiana before that? What do you have to say about the Steel City?
Yeah. A few of the things you said, like the walkability and I like to bike. So it's like very catered to commuting in that sense, like biking and walking. There's a lot of trails and paths, but the city itself, it's blue collar very much so at the forefront. I would say it's a hardworking blue collar city, but mm-hmm. it's also been getting gentrified because it hit from what I've heard, it hit a really bad lull. Like I would say like 90s or early 2000s or something. But then it's had a revitalization.
Is that similar to like jobs getting shipped overseas, mill stuff that leads
to that downturn?
I believe
so. Yeah. Yeah. And then another big thing was like, the hospitals here are like renowned as some of the better, like Western PA or like for Midwestern hospitals, mm-hmm. like Ohio people come to hospitals in Pittsburgh and West Virginia will travel because they just have gotten a good reputation for having a good hospital system here. And no, when you stay, the children's hospital is right at the top of the hill from where I live here in Lawrenceville, and it is just massive. And you hear such good things about, kind of like similar to the Barbara Bush there in Portland. So,
hell yeah,
like just totally. Just highly regarded. And then a lot of tech jobs, like Google just revamped like this massive old brick steel building. On the outskirts of town, they've literally created a new like borough called Bakery Square. So just stuff like that, where you can just kind of tell
people are
buying these cheap ass, like massive infrastructure. The buildings are never going to go anywhere. Like Noah's been at my place. Like they're on top of each other, but they're all brick and insulated so well. Like it's just the infrastructure of these buildings is good bones, you know,
yeah.
like they're not going anywhere. So,
yeah, me a set of good bones on
the definition yeah. though of built like a brick shit house, like part.
Yeah,
they've also built just mostly emphasis on the house, less on the shit, but just compact. It was factory, like because they're all uniform, right? Or
mm-hmm.
there's those sections that are clearly like your whole hill was the same house as I remember.
Yeah, row houses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Row houses. Yeah, yes, all, yes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what people that yeah. say water call them.
Yeah.
but yeah, I don't know. It was cool also just to have anyone move away and yeah. then actually be like, oh, this is dope here. Cause when am I going to go to Pittsburgh otherwise?
Totally. And that interview, that first interview was right on the precipice of you moving, correct?
Was that, what year was it? 2020?
March 2020. Late March.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah,
March 27th, 2020. We did it about.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, I moved less than a year after that. So I moved in, early 2021, end of 2020.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And obviously the reason you moved was not just for a change of pace or whatever, but because Permahang was really growing, and your presence was needed in Pittsburgh. I didn't really realize there was that big of a gap since that other podcast, and mm-hmm. you hadn't moved and stuff. So talk about what sort of led to being like, yeah, this is definitely the move if this is going to keep, I'm committing to this in this way. And it's time for something new.
Yeah. I mean, it was something that my business partner, Andy, had kind of put out there into the world. We were running out of space at my apartment where I was doing all of our fulfillment and stuff out of. So like my entire living room and most of my bedroom was like just dedicated to inventory, t-shirt boxes and shit. So, and he also kind of had this thing where he wanted to get into, he didn't know what he was wanting to do, but real estate, because we ended up buying this house here with a separate entity that he created. So funded with PH money. And then we've also expanded and bought other properties here in Pittsburgh that we're currently Airbnb-ing out and stuff. So that's a whole different topic. But ultimately, just diversifying his and our portfolio. And we wanted to get a house to do it rather than a storefront, because we necessarily weren't ready for that. And that's just empty money. That's just burned money for an e-commerce brand. It's not like we're going to even have $500 sales days with the storefront. Yeah. We knew what we were. We're an online brand. So I was kind of followed his lead with it. And it was one of the hardest decisions I've ever made in my life, was uprooting my entire life and right. moving, 600 and something miles away, to a place that I'd been to two or three times, to visit him and, do some beer events we had done here in the past. But, that's what the move was. It was solely for functionality purposes, for, just getting a house that we could, basically outfit the basement. He knew exactly what he wanted to do, so I just kind of followed his lead with it.
I kind of forget how really it just speaks to how much you've grown as a business owner and operator in the last couple years, because it seems like forever ago when I would talk to you, but even when PH started and you were still working with us, but just the really what I'm trying to get at is if I'm assuming you didn't then, but if it was now, would you try to convince him to start buying property in Portland?
We looked at that originally. Insane.
Yeah.
This place, we looked at storefronts there. I exhausted every opportunity to sell him on Portland. It wasn't selling Andy on Portland. It was, he couldn't swallow what type of financial situation that we were going to be putting ourselves into. And then, honestly, that's why Pittsburgh is kind of having its moment the last 4 or 5 years or so, is because of the affordability to live here. When you redo one of the house that I live in, one of these row homes, they're fairly cheap, and you can make it you can make it whatever you want, because it's not a ton of space that you're trying to remodel or renovate or whatever you're doing. But ultimately, the housing market here was, and for other endeavors down the road, we just have a very wide net to cast out there. Whereas in Portland, I forget the numbers. I could have rattled them off a year or so ago, but the per square footage in downtown. Do you guys remember where, I forget the name of the coffee shop. It was on outer Commercial Street, going towards where Sleek Machine used to be.
Yep.
That Chinese restaurant switched or moved, or maybe it was a sushi shop. But anyway, it moved. It was a corner, shitty spot. Even that was unaffordable, and it was dilapidated. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
and to quote Home Alone 2, it ain't much better in here, kid. It has not improved one bit. Yeah. Pittsburgh as the, really, you're kind of putting all these Easter eggs out there. You're talking about these other ventures. I know Matt is,
I'm having trouble not
so I'm going to get, go
Airbnb
for it, buddy.
Stuff.
Go for it.
Now, real quick, super smart what you just said.
Yeah.
In terms of buying a small or renting a small commercial space to do fulfillment and what other admin duties you would have to do for the business is a really tough cost, input cost to swallow. So you buy a residential built building with plans to just live in or to do other things with down the road? That's a question. And then outfit the basement to have a space to be your commercial spot, to have room to do what you need to do for the business. Kind of unpack there and talk that thought process through with you and Andy.
Yeah. So like I said, it was Andy's idea. Mm-hmm. He has a very unique way to attack problems or issues that we encounter. And not to say that he leads like with all of those, but with these like bigger ones, I definitely lean on him a lot. And like I said, he's the reason why I'm here in Pittsburgh and why we have this house. And, but ultimately, what he was selling me on was like, listen, you'll be able to live here for free. The mortgage will be taken care of because that'll be the money that we'd be putting out to rent a space in downtown Portland or however you would want to attack this. And, it's not to say that I couldn't have, sold him on doing Portland and doing the same thing there. I just think from a financial standpoint, this was just such a smart, barrier to entry for this idea to see if there's proof to the pudding. So yeah, that was the initial idea. There really isn't much more to unpack other than that we needed to have a bigger space for fulfillment. I needed to find a space to live, and it kind of is just like, this makes a whole lot of sense. So.
Did you guys buy that as permanent hangover?
No. So there's a separate real estate group called Zadina and Oak that we have been making purchases with. We bought the house right next door and are potentially closing on another one in the neighborhood here. We just rent the one out next door, but I utilize the basement there just like I do the basement here. So it's overstocked because we've also grown since I've moved here a year and a half ago.
Permanent Hangover as a brand has grown.
Yeah, just like our orders and stuff have, you know, we've continued the steady, like very, very steady growth for just merch and shirts and glassware. And so I've been utilizing the basement. I still use my basement. Like when I go to work, I just walk down my stairs to the basement. And but I'm starting to outfit 308. But we have a student coming from overseas to go to Carnegie Mellon here, and he's actually going to be in there from August to December through Airbnb app. Like,
so now I have
to pull all my stuff out of the basement over there because he needs full access to the basement with the washer and dryer since he's going to do an extended stay. So it's all good because he's
that has to be
Airbnb
a good amount
rates.
Of money.
The long term,
you can rent
good.
A U-Haul storage unit with
it's
that.
All good. So I think like. Another good thing to add here is like, we've like kind of made ourselves known in the like world of crap, like this beer merch stuff that we do or the clothes and shit that we make. I pride myself on getting it there as fast as I can. I try to compete with Amazon. I know I'll never win that race, but it's a carrot I dangle in front of my head. I get orders out as quick as I possibly can, because I'm a consumer as well, and I know that I really like getting things as quick as I can, especially if you're spending your hard-earned money on shit.
Fuck yeah.
You just kind of want to get it there as quick as you can. I fold everything meticulously. The presentation of when you get a package from us, I want that to be like you're opening an iPhone, like when you open and just how like tight and like pretty everything is, like that matters a lot to us here, so... we put a lot of emphasis on that, and that's definitely changed. It's just kind of setting ourselves apart in any way we can. I mean, there's so many people doing this stuff now. Like, you see, like, Shithead Steve and all these Instagram accounts kind of starting to, like, fizzle in our lane with, like, doing stupid shirts that say, like, commit tax fraud and just dumb, dumb.
Tax fraud, bro. That shirt.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, yeah. So just
crazy.
So Shithead Steve has, like, a shirt brand, you're saying?
Everyone.
Yeah,
does,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Huge following.
Yeah.
And you're not selling merch to them. Like, you're leaving massive dollars on the table.
So just trying to, you know, take that into consideration is just making sure we're getting stuff to people as fast as they can and as nicely as we can out of the house here. And then after you guys left, we actually brought on this is an avenue that I'm trying to get continue to grow for us, which actually might get to a head where we need to buy a fulfillment center. But we signed we put into ink a deal with really good artist, a friend of ours. That's his Instagram handle, Matt Gray. He's become a pretty good friend over the last few years. And he reached out to us about who we used for merch. And I guess Andy and him had a dialogue on social. They're just talking back and forth. But ultimately he started doing shirts and merch and different things, and he's got a way bigger audience than we do. So I actually oversee and do all of his fulfillment, and he's doing more than we are, not quite double, but he's doing a lot. Like, he does weekly drops, whereas we do bi-weekly or monthly. Mm-hmm. But he drops every week. He has a drop tonight at 8 o'clock. I'll be up first thing in the morning getting his shirts out into the mail. I handle all his poly mailer ordering, and I order all of his shirts. We funnel everything through PH. So the thousands of dollars of shirt orders that we make for him, all funneled through our account, and we just pay him out at the end. So we have a fee. I have a $3.50 service fee for every shirt I put into a bag. So if he does 150 shirts tonight, 200 next week, I mean, people can do the math. You're starting to add incremental. Mm-hmm. So now we're starting to pay the mortgage here with somebody else's money, if you will.
Yeah, wow.
Are you trying to scale that as a service?
Yeah, I'm trying to blow this up. Yeah. I'm trying to blow that portion of this all up. Like, because people really like getting this stuff. And they don't have, so he's an artist. He doesn't want to sit in the basement or sit in his kitchen, which is what he was doing. I think he did like a few small merch runs early on. He hated it. So he was just like, you guys handle this. We trust you. We had transparency with all of our invoices and ordering. It's all, you know, regulated, and there's a vision to everything he wants to see. Andy puts together nice monthly breakdowns of everything for him on the back end. So, I'm really trying to grow this avenue. We're actively looking to, we have a few people that we might reach out to get online doing the same thing. Which is also, I've had to bring on part-time help here in Pittsburgh and put out some feelers. So we got a new kid, Trevor, doing part-time packaging and event stuff with us. And then we brought this girl on, Elia, who's doing all of our like customer service stuff. Cause now we're dealing with multiple brands, people emailing, kind of swap this out, yada, yada. So, just definitely, a bit of a growth spurt, I guess, since the last time you've been here, Noah, just in different avenues. That's not necessarily PH,
which is
but
awesome.
We can talk about PH,
but it is. Yeah. And that's why it's so fucking cool.
It's PH for me. Yeah. But it's not like the branch.
I got you.
Our Instagram handle, but this is like my PH world of like, this is, yeah.
And that's where it makes so much, like, we're just having the conversation. You have a shithead Steve, you have all of these people.
We're giving him way too much airtime.
A lot of credit. But you have these people with followings and people that really love being a part of their world, but they don't want to do fulfillment. They don't want to, they know they've got good ideas and they can sell something to somebody and there can be mutual value there. And then you can essentially be like fulfillment as a service for these people that don't want to be doing that 24/7.
Yeah. So our competition there is like Printful, dropship companies, like massive
dropship
companies.
Dropship was what I was looking for. Thank you.
This is exactly what we're doing, but at least you know me, you know Andy, for smaller brands, like we're not going to get any of those bigger ones that we've been naming. Like, they go through Printful and probably have a very lucrative deal with them. We're looking we're not necessarily like small fry, because you know we're at a pretty decent scale with just PH and RGA, really good artists, but we're looking for people in that vein, people that like we can connect with or would do a project with. So kind of like an umbrella of like people that have same vision and ideology and quirks that we find funny, which Matt is really in like the perfect example of somebody that we would love to have as a partner with us for that. And then I guess just like more local, like those Printful brands and companies like that do the drop shipment, they're just massive. And you're just emailing a customer service person.
Totally.
But like Matt, when his orders come in, I do all of his photography for him. So everything that you see on his page that's going out to 100,000 plus people that see this, those are all just shot on my floor in the kitchen here. Like I care about it more than Printful would. You know what I mean? Like, I get the stuff and I move it from the cardboard boxes and then I fold them and put them into like our containers downstairs. Like, just little things like where I care about this shit because like he's my friend kind of, you know what I mean?
Can you speak to
that's
that?
That's my selling pitch for, I guess, for anybody that would want
to speak to that a little bit. You said the I think the iPhone thing was really important because we had this time in the 80s when CFOs were the CEOs and everything got shipped out of the country. So it was like you got a Timex watch because you could get that thing for $7 or whatever, and they came with no packaging. They came with nothing, and then Steve Jobs came around and kind of made you fall in love with all this stuff again. When you buy a product from them, it's beautifully packaged. He thought about the experience of how you receive your product, and the way that's moved forward to now with all these different avenues and companies, I think it's a huge differentiator. I've got like golf streetwear brands that are popping up and I get ads all the time, and I won't mention the companies, but I bought one and it came in like a plastic bag with nothing on it, and it was reasonable quality and whatever. And I bought another and it had a couple stickers and it came in a beautiful box, and it had a little note about how I'm gonna fucking shoot a double bogey, and it just had this experience of opening up this box. And not for nothing, I've ordered one again, bought some socks again from one of them, and I never touched the other one again. Those differentiators really matter, and you seem to care about it, which is very important for when you do stuff for RGA. Talk about what the experience of opening up a really good artist package is if you were to order a t-shirt from them.
Yeah, so RGA, we're still trying to get to there. I put a sticker in for all his orders, but I'm just going to push it back to PH, which is like where we've been doing this a little bit longer as far as like having merch and shit online. But yeah, man, like on the back end, like if I see an order when I'm printing a label and I'm like, man, I see that name. So instead of doing a bulk print, I'll go and click and be like, you know, Stacy's ordered from us. This is our 10th order. So on the inside of the flap, I'll be like, thank you. This is your 10th order. And I'll make like I'll put a bracelet in there. We have, thick cardstock stuff downstairs. It's like, thank you from Permanent Hangout. Just small stuff like that does matter. And I do take a lot of that into consideration when I'm doing fulfillment. And definitely that's something I lean into 100%. You'd have to be crazy not to keep those customers coming back, man.
And not to go crazy and double down, but I seen Andy post a couple days ago about being a super host on Airbnb, which is the other thing you guys are in. And underneath, like, the fact that he was a super host and had these reviews, he made a joke about, goddamn, it's good to give out some free Reese's or include some, like, something water when you check in. But it's
every glass at the Airbnb is Permanent Hangover branded. The entire place is outfitted with permanent Hangover prints. There's all the beer collabs we've done in the past are in the fridge. That barley wine bottle from the Jack Yo's collab we did, there's three of those in there. There's LaCroix, there's snacks, there's liquor bottles, there's everything you could want. Then we want that experience to be like top, and we do not sell it as a PH thing. Yeah. Like we could, and we might at some point, but like, again, we're only like 12, 15 guests deep right now. Yeah. So, that's a big thing. Like him and I talk about is just like not half-assing anything anymore. We're too, there's no excuse. We have the, financial capabilities to make something that we need like to have online. Like, I don't need to be taping with a tape gun these boxes. There's a craft tape machine that you can buy from, you know, these companies. They're like $900. Like, I would have been terrified to buy that like 3 years ago because it would have just seemed like such a waste of money. But now I'm meticulous. Like, that tape has to be literally parallel with the corners of the box. Like, it's kind of psychotic in a way.
The reason you're doing it is at least very much wrapped up in your success. Like it is the summation of all those little things. And it's so funny because I think every business goes through it as they get better, like purchases that just, even when money's, it's all relative, but purchases that seemed like only Steve Jobs have one of those. Then like 6 months later, somehow something changes where you understand, probably from doing it the shitty way for those 6 months, of like, oh, that's the money. That's where the money is. Yeah. So it's funny to hear. I always love hearing any of that. Talk about maybe like the next steps, I guess, because when we were in Pittsburgh, you had talked a lot about, but also sort of weren't sure about it. Because I think when you moved there, the plan was to open a bar, a PH mm-hmm. bar. And when I left with you there, it seemed very much on the table, but you and Andy kind of mutually seemed unsure about that plan at the time of if that was the way to go. And with the Airbnb thing, clearly you've made at least a pretty big pivot in that direction. So how does that expand, or what are you targeting for other people? Like, you have an artist, like-minded person. Is there some other sort of business model that you might be trying to attract for, just like you say, diversification?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the goal, and still kind of is. Not kind of, still is the goal. It's just trying to. We had a spot fall through. It was kind of like a joke, but Andy and I were like really looking at this one spot, and we put up on April Fool's that we signed on it, which we didn't. But we were sitting down. We had looked at it, yada yada. Sat on it too long. It ultimately got signed on by somebody else. It wasn't a purchase. It was to lease, mm-hmm. a bar storefront. And we really wanted to be in Lawrenceville, the neighborhood that I live in. If you're local to Pittsburgh and listen to the podcast, you know what I'm talking about. Lawrenceville is kind of like the cool little hip spot, like right adjacent to downtown Pittsburgh. But I said earlier that there's a wide open real estate. Lawrenceville is getting a little tighter. So just trying to make sure that could sink us, you know. That's a thing that could fail in 2-3 years, and it's a money pit.
Yeah.
You hear about bars opening and closing
totally
yearly by friends, yep. You know? So we're not taking that endeavor lightly. We don't take anything lightly, but that one's like, I'm very adamant and gung ho and still have, spots and stuff that I'm like actively looking at, but, yeah, Andy is moving back to Pittsburgh next month. He's also, I think that's why my phone was going off. He just welcomed his firstborn child into the world, live on this podcast.
Congratulations, Andy. Yeah.
Literally, I had to turn our Slack off. Baby PH. Yeah, so he has a lot going on right now. So I'm keeping PH afloat, you know, as far as like
someone's got
getting orders out, projects, stuff like that. But
is he still at
once
Nestle?
No, he took a job with a startup here in Pittsburgh last month. So him and his wife are both moving. Obviously, they're moving back to the burg. They closed on a house. They're in the middle of selling their house in Ohio. So just a lot of stuff going
they're
on
in
right
Cleveland.
Now in his world. They cool. are, yeah. So he'll be here next month. And I fully expect once that boy lands back here, it's going to be a little bit more of a pedal to the metal on getting this bar going.
I bet, man. Because it's also kind of a marvel to me. That was another thing that sunk in on the visit of not that he was doing any less, like there was no resentment in anything you talked about with the relationship. But of course, it's anytime I'm up here, my relationship with Eric, Seth, Paul, whoever it is in Portland, there's physical distance, and then just there's things that can get lost in translation, and it can just be a slippery slope of. It's a whole job in of itself to try to manage that.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact that you guys seem to be doing it really well, but I mean, holy shit, that's going to be like a thunderbolt, I feel like. How could it mm-hmm. not be?
Yeah.
If you've been working remote for like that.
Yeah, I mean, we've been working remote since 2018 when we
right.
started this thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
right. Quick thing before I forget, it's very small, but as we talk about sort of how much you guys are doing, very seriously, like, what are you going to do when that basement's gone next door?
For next door, I'll try to maximize what I can out here. And we are also looking at other properties that we haven't necessarily, like, put offers in on. But we'll cross that bridge cool. when we get there. Yeah.
You enter the door, first question, can I see the basement?
Yeah.
Every time. Like,
he's definitely cooking something. Yeah.
I'm just curious, you guys, so smart. You talk about using data for your customers and all of this stuff. You must have the sense being in like a DTC consumer kind of digital brand, getting into the Airbnb thing. And frankly, me and my friends have been trying to do it. Two of my best friends and kind of going through the process. We've got a strict budget, and the same thing has happened here with real estate. But kind of the general thought is like, if you are bringing in income on an asset that generally appreciates over time, you are in a very good math equation that is very hard to, if you do it right, you're very safe if you can be liquid long enough to deal with any upturns, downturns, any of that stuff. Bars are a very different thing. You know what I mean? And the slim margin, high, like laborious grind and money pit that is a bar. I'm just curious how you're thinking about that and rectifying that, because it's almost, you said like you had this place, it could have been possible, and you just kind of didn't jump on it fast enough and it slipped out from under you. Is some of that kind of the natural good feedback of where your focus is, and that those places are mathematically advantageous to be in, and that bar's a scary leap?
Yeah, I think just trying to be methodical about what we're getting ourselves into. Mm-hmm. Just to get into having a liquor license is, you know, $100,000 out the gate.
Yeah. I forgot about that till right now. What the hell? When you told me, because it's like what, $5,000 in Portland, $2,500?
It's capped in Pittsburgh too. So now your paperwork's sitting on desks because there has to be like an in and out type thing, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a cap for Allegheny County. So
I think it's like that in Boston. I'm quite sure.
Yeah. It's an in out model. So obviously you don't want to be on that outside, which is why we're scared.
Yeah.
To do it. But anyway, there's places going under and just flipping their friggin' liquor license. So they're like, we'll close the door, but we want $350,000 liquor license, turnkey. You can
open
come
market
take our
liquor
over.
License price. Wow.
Boom.
Wow. Yeah.
Which is like, it's like the wild, wild west. So yeah, scary to basically put everything we have to our names down just to get a bar open.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we're looking at. But, we have people, we have family and friends, and I'm willing to max myself out. I'm willing to put every fucking penny I have to my name to get this thing off the ground. But, I'm taking some financial advice from somebody that I trust very much. So I'm just going to kind of follow his lead with the financial, these bigger financial,
what's he saying? Do more Airbnbs and bump the brakes on the bar or what?
He said, keep landing those drop ships. Keep landing the clients to you're doing fulfillment.
That's incredible.
So, we'll get there.
Yeah. And just to paint the context a little bit more, a hard thing to do because this type of thing is hard to visualize. Mm-hmm. But for like volume of what you are doing, because again, that basement was full, but very clean and organized. It looked like a professional warehouse, but just in the basement of a home. I think a lot of that was glass, but like at a time, I'm not sure how you'd want to talk about it, but whether it's units ordered for an individual drop or units you keep in inventory or that happen to stay in inventory at a time or whatever, but give me just a feel for the actual quantity.
Being on my laptop, I'm able to kind of pull this up. We did a
he's a
half
business
year,
man.
He's not a business man. He's a business man.
We did a half year breakdown. Let's go with the big month. June was big for us. We had 933 shipments out the door.
Wow.
Matt, really good artist, had 581 in June for a total of 1,514 orders out of the door in the month of June for both. April was 1,062 shipments for PH, 617 for RGA for a total of 1,579. So, I mean, we're putting
shit,
out,
dude. Holy
you know,
shit.
A decent amount of orders like for
You're fulfilling 50 packages almost daily.
Holy shit.
Correct? I got that math right?
Yeah, but I mean, if it's like a shirt order for Matt, it's all one design. So our shit's way more complicated because like when we're starting to do collections now, so it'll be like a t-shirt or golf balls or this or that or the glass, whatever it may be. So you're just like picking like I'm an Amazon worker, man. I'm just down there. I have all the shelves are organized. So I'm like, all right, pull
but
this
you
down,
ain't working for Bezos, baby.
Trying to get that package there faster than the man, though.
Yeah. So. Holy fuck, man. Yeah. I'm glad I asked that because that those sheer numbers, that's fucking impressive, dude. I think I cut Matt
it's a good
off
amount
though.
For sure.
No, it's incredible. I don't want to. I think now I'm gonna have to have a personal conversation with you later about Airbnb stuff. But I would love to. We had touched base the other night. I think I had seen you. You were reading the David Goggins book, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And kind of the growth that you've gone through to grow into this place and to be able to do all of these things, I would love to just talk to you about it. It's something that I relate to. I've been on this pod. I had like a huge period of growth when I was coming out of drug addiction. And then you kind of have the complacency and all the comforts of life that kind of stymie that. You know what I mean? And I've recently been trying again. I've quit cigarettes and lost some weight and just kind of signed up for marathon, trying to do some things. But when I look at you, man, I mean, you've lost a significant amount of weight, moved, like put it all on the line in belief in yourself, are talking about being willing to do that again. Just a number of things that you've done in the personal growth space. Let's untalk it, pack about it, what's worked for you, what hasn't worked and stuff like that. Let's talk about where like the negative feelings that you deal with to lead to like needing growth. You know what I mean? I think for anybody who's going to go on these paths or needs to read Goggins, there's stuff that you feel that's negative to begin with. And that's not the part that everybody talks about. Everybody talks about the fucking inspirational quote on the Instagram and yada, yada, yada. But that's coming from a negative place. What are the things that you wanted to change about yourself?
Yeah, it's a big question. I think it was mostly just like every time I would flip over like a stone, it was just not what I was looking for. Like the relationships I was in or manifesting or the people I was around and kind of I didn't have my own identity, I guess, is ultimately what I would say is like I was just kind of a product of who I was with and who I was hanging with and what I was doing. And I did reach out to Noah initially to talk about this. So I don't want to come off too preachy or over the top about any of this stuff. Cause I know how it can come off. And honestly, a lot of it's all just like, I'm going to give you like my personal thing.
Yeah.
Don't take any of this as like gospel or anything like that. This is like you said, my journey.
Yeah.
So I guess I would say, you know, having the lack of an identity of who I was or who I wanted to be, which ultimately starts with like an internal dialogue. I had zero, none of that with myself, none of it. So working in craft beer, you're surrounded with, if you're an employee or an owner of it, what free alcohol, free food, truck food, anything, like, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
like you
absolutely.
Could have all that stuff for an extreme discount, if not free.
Yep.
Right. So holy shit, was that cool, right? How cool is that? It's very cool, especially if, somebody like myself who doesn't necessarily come from much, growing up on food stamps, government assistance, coming home from school and having no electricity because mom couldn't pay the bills. It's just shit that I've seen. So having these like opportunities to get stuff for free or just have kind of like an open world of like, oh, like Bissell Brothers takes care of their employees. They pay people well. So it was just, that was all fucking new to me, man. So just having like, that free for all, I had no self like discipline, no internal dialogue, not telling myself no, stuff like that. So that's definitely a big part of it for sure. Is where I would say is just starting to take inventory. I take inventory every day, every night when I go to bed. What did I eat today? How do I feel? Was I tired? Why was I tired? Stuff like that. Like,
how long have you been doing that?
That didn't start. So that started like, I want to say right before I moved here. But I had already kind of started on the journey of trying to like lose weight and just trying to take control of my life. That started in 2019. I did a whole 30 to start out the year. I do whatever the hell you want, but like, honestly, that was like pretty eye-opening for me. You know, I was, I weighed in at like 228. I remember it. And I was at my friend Matt's barbershop and I was about to get my hair cut. And Matt's like one of my best friends from like childhood, Northern Maine shit. So he is like, bro, you look big, buddy. And I was like, let's see how much. So, cause I thought it was kind of funny, honestly. I could care less. And I was a piece of shit. Like, it was bad. But anyway, yeah. So I was like a whoa moment to see, you know, damn near 230 on this fucking 5'7" frame. Doesn't look that good, let me tell you. So that was a big jumping off point. That was like a holiday season 2018. So then I started doing
tough time to weigh. Yeah.
So kind of eye opening, but yeah.
So it's so hard for so many people to start. Like, everyone can go to the gym for a week. Like, everyone can have that moment of scale shock or whatever it is and be like, fuck, like, I need to, this is the wake up call or whatever. But then the creature comforts are always just, they're never far away. No matter, you have to decide they're not coming in. So many people just really struggle. I've struggled in weight loss has never been a huge, huge thing for me, but in periods where, you know, I'm feeling a little bigger than I want to be or whatever, and just like, okay, I just need to get in better shape than I'm in. The first few times are easy, but the sustained of it is the tough part. What were sort of some walls you had to break through, setbacks, or was it just slow and steady and just continuing to ramp that up?
It was slow and steady for sure, but I had like no dietary like inklings of like how to eat healthy or what was good for my body. Again, kind of deeper rooted stuff from my childhood, like just eating like frozen foods and stuff like that. And then, being like catapulted and, you know, when I first moved back to Maine in my early 20s and starting at like the brewery and stuff was like, there's beer dinners and like, you know, you get freaking comps at like every other restaurant in town. Yeah. And it's awesome. Yeah. I'm not shitting you gotta have some stuff, you gotta have some self control. Yeah. So, just dieting was big. And like you said, like once you start, it started like rapidly. So that 228 got down to like 210. And I was like, holy shit. After like a week, you know what I mean? I'm just
holy
like,
shit,
not like that much, but you know what I mean? Like when you're that big, it comes off so much quicker. Uh-huh. So to answer your question of how I maintain it, cause it does start to stall out. Like, I would say that I was doing good in Maine, but so I moved end of 2020, early 21. So that was like a year and a half ish, 2 years of being in Maine, trying to like better myself, trying to eat better, trying to take care of myself. Playing basketball was big too. But, once I moved here, like I didn't know anybody. Mm-hmm. I knew like maybe three people. So I had to remove myself from, I could have done it in Maine. I think I definitely could do it now, but like the comforts, like those comforts of, cause I wasn't making that good of progress. I was making all right progress, but yeah, anyway, moving here was like, you're stuck with yourself. I stuck with my thoughts, stuck with just trying to, hone in on what I was doing and, just trying to get better in every facet of what I was trying to attain. And ultimately that was just having a healthier inner dialogue with myself.
It's fucking crazy, man. Because I mean, also, let's not forget this is an audio medium. I think I even said when I got back from it, like, yeah. So Cam's a male model now, just so you know. But like, you look fantastic, and not in a weird way. But what do you weigh in at now, roughly?
Yeah, so I'm 140 right now. I've gotten as low as 128, so I had to hit 100. Just to show myself that I could do it. And that was healthy.
Yeah,
that was not healthy at all. I'm actually starting to creep up a little bit because I've been playing a little bit more basketball because I was so cycle heavy. But I got into cycling, which has been like crazy. So I've been doing crazy and like
good
very good workout. Yeah. So it's like, it's therapy. It's my put the headphones on and go for a ride around the city for an hour and a half, get 10, 15 miles in, you know, burn 600-700 calories and not feel guilty about what I have for dinner. And, you know, I do that like 3 or 4 nights a week. Sometimes in the summer I'll double dip and Peloton and then ride in the evening, but I like love it. And, but I started playing basketball a little bit more recently too, because I had a bad knee injury, which is why I got into cycling to begin with. I had a grade 2 MCL. Yeah, she was like, my PT was like, you could either swim or get into cycling to try to, because I didn't get surgery because it was just a minor tear. It was just a grade 2 sprain, but it hurt like hell. And I did some damage to my hamstring as well during, or pulled my hamstring. So my right, like, leg and knee and hammy get tight pretty quickly these days, especially as I'm getting deep closer to my mid-30s. So cycling's been huge for that, just kind of low, like you said, low impact, and you can rip and not really feel like shit the next day as far as body fatigue and stuff.
Do you, the moving to Pittsburgh thing,
yeah,
kind of, or let me say it better, the removing the comforts,
yeah,
I think is a huge part of this stuff. And for me, it's like what I'm fighting against is having so many comforts. Like you said, and I remember when I came out of drug addiction, it wasn't by being around where all the relationships were and where all the stuff was.
Yeah.
It was by moving to where I almost had no choice. And then in that same element, I had nothing else to do but focus on bettering myself. And I joked about it on the last podcast, but I've been thinking about it a ton. Of like how to artificially remove the comforts. Like I joke, like I want to go to jail for real. I do, but
guess
like
who's going to jail
without
tonight?
The consequences of going.
I feel
you. What I'm saying. Like I want to induce or find some way to put like, what's the word for when things are hard? Adversity. I want to like just induce some adversity into my system. To get back to that place, to be in that mode, even as things are starting to go the right way and I'm getting better habits and I'm going, do you worry or fight against as you do this and as things start going right, got a new girl you're talking to, business as you go in the right way, are you feeling yourself slip in any way or how do you fight against the growth that comes from making all those changes, bringing good
That's
feedback
a great
that makes it so easy to stop doing those hard things?
It's a great question. Man, I actually have like doubled down and like I'm going harder than ever on the health and other fronts, because it seems like the more I put into that and working on myself, it's all mental, man. Mm-hmm. Like it sounds so gimmicky. And again, I preface this whole thing with like, please don't take me like that. But like falling in love with the process, being challenged, it's hard work. And I have been at it for 2-3 years now. And I genuinely, genuinely love biking, working out in my gym, my home gym here, all those things. Like I love it, and I don't feel guilty when I don't work out, but I do feel a little bit of guilt, and that's okay, because that's like I'm missing out on something that I should be doing every day. I shoot to get in some type of physical activity every single day. So falling in love with that process is really the process of just like taking the time to like, and sometimes I'm like, all right, I'll wake up and I'm like, I'm going to do a big ride tonight. Work gets out of my hand, whatever. It's 7 o'clock. I still haven't made dinner. It's like, how I, you know, I'm normal. Mm-hmm. I have setbacks and all this shit, like just like anybody else. So I sit my fucking ass down on that yoga mat and I'll stretch for 15 minutes and I'll stare at the ceiling fan and I'll count each one as they go by. I really do this and I'll just be mindful and I'll be present. And it's okay. You didn't get your bike ride in today. Stretch, take some time for yourself. And then I'll snap out of it. I'll go make dinner. And that was my workout. Mm. And like, all I did was stretch, but like I did set the, so maybe my body was tired or whatever. And I do have to listen to my body. So it necessarily couldn't have gotten that in, but, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just kind of like no excuse type shit, falling in love with the process. And then the results.
Well,
come.
Beyond that, let me ask you about what you just said. Cause it, I've been thinking a lot about capitulation. In kind of every sense, it happened to me a lot, like when I was trading a lot and like in the stock market or stuff like that. Like once you take a certain degree of L's, I would just like close my eyes, put the blinders on, and take the L all the way to the to hell. You know what I mean? And when I miss, like when you're talking about when the day gets away, I capitulate and I take that L all the way. And then I might miss tomorrow. And I've been doing good. I'm never going to go day three.
Capitulate mean like spiral?
Capitulate means like giving up to the bad feedback. Like I feel like you can kind of just unplug from it and give in to it completely. You just, you let it win, essentially. What you're talking about is in that opportunity to capitulate. I ain't going to get my ride in tonight. It's already 7. Fulfillment was crazy. There's no way I'm going on that big ride. But I'm not going to capitulate and take that total L. Let me get a tiny, tiny win here that is that is not the total loss to kind of keep me up and keep me rolling. Is there something that I'm saying there that makes sense in the way that you're functioning and being able to keep this consistent to have gains over 2.5 years?
Yeah, absolutely. It's no, like you just gotta roll with the punches, really. And like ultimately, I don't necessarily know what capitulate means as like a definition in the book, but yeah, man, just no excuses, no excuses. I'm done. I'm long past making an excuse of why. Okay, bike ride's not happening. Maybe I take my dog on a 2-mile walk instead of a half mile walk around the block. I can do it. There's no excuse. I'm done half-assing stuff, whether it's work shit or personal stuff or some, no excuses. I know it's easy to say, and sometimes
the gold, I think, and what you said is, cause I had sort of an aha moment with it. So I have weights in my basement. I'm not like trying to become I don't take it that seriously, but it's like a form of exercise that I like. And if you're going to do it, like you kind of need to do it somewhat regularly to make it worth doing in the first place. Because then it's like, if you miss a week, then you got to take off 2.5 off each, bar. So I have a bunch of horrible habits with when and how I work out. I'm kind of a night owl, so I'll usually do it at night. And when you talk about all the things that you can let, then the longer you let it go in the day, the more things can present themselves to derail whatever your grand plans are. Or you might just, your headspace might not be, you're giving your headspace more time to get away from you. And then with the Milo trips, I can't do anything really, or I realistically just don't do anything for these 2 or 3 days a week I'm up here. So it's really important I do something Monday or Tuesday, or it's going to be the whole week is gone. And I would get I'd be sitting at 10, like doing whatever, thinking about how I should be going downstairs to work out, but like couldn't bring myself to do it. And then I had, my shoulder was bothering me a little bit. So basically I cut out half the workout, and whatever of this gnawing, it all went away. It's the compromise, but it's still a fucking win, because some working out's better than no working out. And it's so much easier if you think you can't do the 100%. And I'm not trying to underscore or undermine, I should say, what you're saying about going all in. But I think for just whatever that the full thing is of the plan that I had laid out, if I can't do that, then I just won't do it at all. And that's changing that attitude, I think, is the fucking secret. Saying.
That's what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And instead of just taking the tiny bit that I can get in to stay with it. I think it's like guilt, or I would rather turn that part of my mind off once I'm feeling bad about being in that place that I'm not going to run tonight, instead of staying in my, like, let's get real corny, instead of staying in my power or something like that, of I'm going to do the stretching, or I'm going to take the dog for a walk, or the little thing that you're doing. I give in to the almost the guilt of not doing it at all. And I like turn away and don't look at any of it. I just, you know what I mean? I don't think about it. I pretend it doesn't exist. And I think that's a major hindrance to my progress. True. That's why I just got so excited with the true aha of like, well, fuck, I could take 5 minutes, anything. There's no excuse for 5 minutes ever, no matter what, to dedicate that time to my progress, working out, mindfulness, any of those things you said. I'm going to start adopting that tonight. Fuck that. Tonight, I didn't plan on working out.
You sure you don't want to capitulate a little bit?
I'm going to get something in just a little bit tonight.
Kind of in the same vein, but extending on that, when you had reached out whatever many months back, you had specifically said mental health in the beer industry, and kind of going back to thinking about inadvertently, I'd say, because I was, you're like, what, a year younger than me, or we're the same age, we're pretty close, but I started the brewery when I was 23, so I'm doing all the same exact bad habits, and that's exactly, and that's the example kind of you walked into. So I think some of that is that we were young. Everyone was pretty much young, or at least the mindset was young. Beer is in a different place, but still, you're either going to die one way or another if you just stay in that lane, or something needs to get you out of it. I'm not exactly sure. It was probably multiple scale looks at or whatever, buying new pants, whatever the normal shit is. But thinking about how when you moved to Pittsburgh then, talking, I guess I'll try to use capitulate in a sentence.
Yeah, like, fuck yeah.
It would have been when you don't know anyone, so you don't have the reason to put yourself out there and whatever. It would be pretty easy to put on 30 pounds and not do shit in a hurry when you're kind of, when a lot more is almost stacked against you to make it easier to give in. Did you experience any of that, or had you sort of grown enough mentally? Had you acquired the tools to make that pretty easy by that time?
It definitely wasn't easy, but it was, like you said, it was going to go one or two ways. I was either going to fall off of everything that I've been trying to work through for that, like, year or whatever before I moved here, and I would have ballooned and just played video games all day when I wasn't working and, you know, drinking, eating, smoking, whatever, but...
Sounds like a Kid Cudi song.
I think... Yeah, probably is. I don't know. I just dug deep, and I was reading a lot of the books that everyone reads. And I think that was a big thing, was just trying to, like, when I got here and like a couple months in, when I truly kind of smacked me, where I was like, I don't fucking know anybody. This is kind of not what I thought I was coming into. And I just got like super internal and started like, having even deeper combos with myself. I'm like, all right, it was so that, yeah, coming here was a new chapter. How do I want to write this chapter? And I had complete control. So it was like, I just wrote it how I wanted to write it. And I was just trying to be the best version of me that I could be. And, I mean, yeah, once you strip away all the comforts and family and, you know, all my friends and everything that I'd come to know as my identity, kind of, you know, there's two ways that, like, I think you can kind of go about these things. And it's like, there's certainty and then there's uncertainty, and you need to have a balance of both, like certainty to make tough decisions confidently. Moving here, I was confident and I was relatively certain that I was going to be able to do this. But I also, there was so much uncertainty, and uncertainty is just as good as that certainty, the uncertainty to be curious, be vulnerable, things like that. So like coming here and like, you know, like trying to meet new people and stuff, that's fucking scary shit, man. It's like not easy in your 30s to like make new friends or form new relationships that aren't old or just kind of like rudimentary, or like just a party. Oh, it's a coworker, friend of a friend. And then 4 years go by and you're like, oh yeah, it's like my best. It's like, is he though?
Yeah.
Like, would you guys have fucking anything in common? Like, what at your core do you, so just pulling yourself far away from those things, man, it's crazy. So maybe that is like I don't think about that enough, but maybe that is something that was a bigger piece to the puzzle than I give it credit for, was just kind of like up and going. And then, you know, coming to a place where I didn't really know anybody.
Yeah. I mean, I think you had to have kind of gotten the headspace enough to even make the move in the first place, but then it's still, you have to, you're there and it's shitty, or in, at times it's shitty because you don't know any, all the things you said. But, you know, you took the right pill, clearly. And I talk with Matt a lot about this on the last episode, just because you guys have both kind of had just, I'm turning this page whether the book likes it or not. Mm-hmm. And I haven't. And I just have an immense amount of respect for it. Because even with much, much smaller battles, I think anyone hearing this, you know how hard... You're the worst opponent in the fucking world. You're really hard to beat. And just seeing you guys both do it in that way is just yeah, it's fucking cool. And I'll stop all that there for both of your sakes.
I want to ask you one more thing in the weeds and then get into some of the what your specific inspirations were, cuz I've kind of subscribed to the idea of like there's like 15 universal truths or something like that. There's 15 or 20 of them, and there's different people.
50 laws of power.
Whether it be Goggins for some, or Jocko for others, or Gary Vee, Tim Ferriss, Ryan Holiday, right down the line. But some people just need stuff kind of packaged and delivered in a certain way that hits for them. But they all come down to love the process. Everything is your fault. You have power over everything. Things aren't happening to you. You're happening to things. You know what I mean? All those universal truth things you work for are going to be better than things that are given to you. But before I get into those inspirations, the one thing that I struggle with the most that I also have the sense is the most important to all of this is the kind of taking inventory thing. I've heard many, many people that I respect and whose kind of brand of self-help means the most to me have different versions of trying to figure out why they feel the way they do, marking it down. It's that old thing, if you care about something, track it. That's a business thing. What should you care about more than your fucking self? You know what I mean? And kind of tracking all these things. Get back into how long you've been doing it, what parts of it work for you, and what it looks like your actual system, and how you're able to sustain that. Because it's something that I do for fucking days and then lose it over and over and over again. I've never been able to do it for more than, I think, 3 weeks is probably my record, like without missing a day.
I think that internal dialogue of like taking inventory is huge. I definitely read it, but I don't remember who I pulled it from. I'm not crazy on those books. I've read them all. I can spew off some shit that I've read in them, but I kind of attacked this in like my own kind of unique way. And you said, yeah, the taking inventory thing's huge. I also kind of went through a sober, curious phase where, like, I just wasn't drinking, wasn't smoking, I was completely sober for 90-something days. That was after I moved here. I had a girlfriend at the time, and then she left, and then I was kind of just, like, back at square one here in Pittsburgh was when I really kind of ramped shit back up again. So, I mean, there's stuff that happens in your life that kind of trigger these things. So definitely tried to make sure I wasn't overreacting, but there's nothing wrong with going clean for 90 days. I was fucking firing on all cylinders, but I also didn't want to miss out on a lot of the fun stuff I do in life. And I just had to strip everything away, man. I learned bad drinking habits, bad eating habits, bad everything. And like to be a good brother, be a good son, to be a good friend, to be a good dog dad, to be just a good human being, I have to be the best version of myself that I can be. I have to get enough sleep. I have to be hydrated. I have to take care of my body. I have to take care of my mind. And then I'm better suited to have better relationships with those people, with the people that matter the most to me. And I learned that I was just falling short on every single one of those things. Like, preach. Just half-assing everything, man. Just half-assing and making an excuse for everything. And I know it sounds preachy, but it's pretty much as simple as that, man. And then, so how do I stick with it? I don't even think about that anymore. It's just a part of my identity, man. Like, I really do love cycling, and I love playing basketball, and I love being active, and it's just a part of my identity. And I think, you know, repetition leads to change. So it's like being repetitive, you know, sure, the first year was like, all right, I got to go work out. But now it's the mindset's changed completely. It's like not even a thing I think about. You know what I mean? It's kind of just like, well, I don't know how to articulate necessarily how I got to that.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, if I can just make an observation, I think when Matt kind of jokingly talks about wanting to go back to jail, because of it is the extreme opposite end of, but then that's kind of how you resort to the mean and unbalanced, like the ever elusive balance that is so hard to find.
Preach.
When, unless you've experienced both poles, then it's pretty easy to like live in that zone. But I'm starting to see more and more that I feel like that's almost part of I definitely feel like it's part of just human evolution and just how culture goes. Like, we go through, you know, we had like, I don't know. I'm not even going to get into that because there's endless examples of these overcorrections on both sides. There's things get real bad, then it way overcorrects to get real bad over here, and just keep swinging the pendulum. But things on the whole, on the chart of human history, the line continues to go up. Even though in lifetimes there might feel like there's some really big dips, but so far it keeps fucking going up.
100%.
And I don't know. I just think that's an important understanding that clearly you have. But it's. I don't know. It's kind of making me want to go to the Himalayas or something. Dude, do something that is very out of the box. So how do you think Matt could maybe go to jail, but not like, well, maybe you could do the kitchen work. It's been far enough where you probably won't get punked.
Do the kitchen work in
as
jail?
A citizen, but you'd have to go to jail.
Oh, like get a job in jail.
Get a job in jail.
You get the clock right out of that, though. You know what I mean? You don't really feel the whole thing. I would sign up for like a SEALs training-y, like boot campy.
I'm sure they'd take you. Like, 36-year-old guy.
But not a real way. Like, you sign up and spend two
weeks. Oh, like the Tiger Woods type SEALs training? Yeah.
And like having nothing. Yeah.
Go play fucking airsoft with some SEALs.
I just started the beginning of like Google. Like,
probably what Chris Pratt did to be in that new Amazon show he's in. Gotcha.
In the woods taking shit for 2 weeks, getting yelled at to find my mean again.
I think you would just be talking a lot about the time you were in the woods for 2 weeks. Yeah. I don't think that would help you find the mean. But
I think that's the thing, is that there's no replacement for it.
Yeah.
Dude, I forgot Tiger did that SEAL training.
I think it's what fucked up his back, to be honest with you.
Yeah, dude, he got
running
jacked.
Around in those fucking boots for years.
For no reason. To fulfill some dream of his dad's.
Yeah. For no reason. Yeah,
let the greatest athletic career of all time slip right through his fucking fingers.
Well, who knows, but...
Dwindle.
Anyway, we got on Tiger Woods. what are... going back, that I have to ask then quickly about PH stuff. Like, from the actual items, I'm just browsing through the catalog... the online, the web store. And as most, did you say the acronym was DTC?
Direct to consumer.
Direct to consumer.
In that model, typical where it's limited runs of things, like most things are sold out, but you still get an idea for the new designs and stuff. Talk about the entering golf, because I thought that was just fucking really cool. Yeah, I know you had the Tiger glass from a while ago, right?
It was like a concept we had, but we didn't bring it to the light until this year. We're just trying to like get into things where you would like have a beer or drink or something at, like concerts, golfing, things like that. And Andy's brother and some of his family golf a little bit, so they kept like pushing him to like bring it to fruition. So we did like the mini golf series thing, and it like crushed. It's like one of our best drops for this year so far, like even competing against some of our hitters, like the shit hoodies and shit t-shirts and stuff. But just trying to expand into different avenues and seeing what sticks. Kind of the same. I feel like I said the same shit last time on here.
No, but you've learned a lot more about what does stick from just existence and success. Are you kind of looking, golf's sort of was marked, to me anyway, like a specific outside of beer and just outside of normal clothing?
Yes, 100%.
So are you eyeing anything sort of in that like secondary zone?
Yeah, I'm actively getting a camo hunter, like outdoor hunting themed thing off the ground for this year. Still working with some of the artists we have in our wheelhouse on who I want to utilize to bring the idea to life. Cause Andy's going to be taking a backseat with art stuff as he's having, becoming a new dad. But, I got this idea that I'm going to bring live, for like fall. I have to look into, like, I'm not a hunter per se. I know a lot of our fans are, a lot of people that buy our stuff are, and I know it would do really well here in Western PA and probably do pretty well in Maine and other areas that we do well at, sales wise. So, but being in our vein of comedic, sure, mixed with kind of, I never want to come off. I don't golf. I don't hunt. So I don't want to be like an imposter totally in these worlds, which inherently I am, cause I don't, but the brand doesn't, you know what I mean? Like those, they can live in all those worlds. So
that's part of the magic of just, the brand.
Right.
For
right.
Real.
Yeah, but then being transparent about it too, it's so just, like kind of making fun of like, oh, got out to hunt my first, you know, turkey and like missed, but at least I got hammered. Yeah. You know, just so many.
Because
you know
Pete's marketing that. Pete's going to put on the fishing smocks and act like he actually was in a river runs through it. Love you, Pete.
Yeah,
But speaking of which, it does seem like more younger people are getting into fly fishing. Matt, for one, but it just seems like that's a trend I've seen larger. Have you looked at that at all? That seems like there might be some crossover there, you know, since you asked for opinions.
No, I welcome any and all. That is kind of it, not specifically fly fishing, but like fishing and hunting as a whole.
See.
We'll see how this sticks and we'll kind of go. So like next year, our brains are turning for this golf collection on how we could, you know, grow on it. Cause we definitely came in way
it's so funny to me just to speak to that. Like a couple years ago, I remember distinctly, you know, I think this way, I love this stuff and was getting back into golf and I'm looking at it and like, there was none of this out here at a time when Barstool had these fucking three kids that focused their sights on golf, kind of changed everything. Golf has gotten younger.
Yep.
So many, like, it's literally a joke on Instagram where like girls are like, what the fuck happened where all these guys like golf? Like, where the fuck is my boyfriend? And at that time, there were none of these cool all the brands that service golfers were this old, stuffy, Titleist, Callaway,
Ping,
all the way across the board. And it truly was like all there was. And then 2 years later, I mean, my entire feed is ads of these new hip golf brands, and there's some great ones, but man, it was such a lag in the market, a missing piece of the market there for a minute. And if you're golfing, you have discretionary income. You know what I mean? Like, it's literally the perfect thing for these digital brands. It was just insane that there was nothing there. And I'm watching a bunch of them right now fucking crush it.
Yeah.
And then the ecosystem as a whole is like better for it. Like, I'm sure these golf courses are loving being booked out the entire summer without a single tee time because everyone and their brother. And then, you know, maybe there's a whiplash from COVID and people getting back out there. But I agree with you
100%. It's a little bit of everything. Like, and Top Golf. At this time, Top Golf came along and made it very fun and gamified it for your normal person. And not everybody, but some of those people like, oh, hey, I hit that thing pretty far. I'm pretty good at this. And they get into golf. I've listened to old timers talk about they love Top Golf. It's been
they love it.
Barstool's a little different. But these old timers I'm talking right now, these golf courses in Maine, and I'm talking to friends in New Hampshire and friends in Mass, are like, it's almost not even fun to golf right now. Every course is packed to the nines every Saturday, yeah, every Sunday. There's not enough places for people to pay. And it's not like you can just fire up a golf course. You know, huge, it's capitally intensive, tons of
land. There's one in Milo you can
takes
buy.
Takes a ton of time to do.
Oh, it's for sale.
I think it's tall. Yeah, it is for sale. $375 if you want it.
Yeah, it's becoming less for sale every day that the green becomes just normal grass.
It's becoming less of a golf course every year that passes.
And more of just a shaped meadow.
I think it would be a great disc golf course is what it would be.
Yeah,
it would
totally
be a great
It's very similar to
investment.
Pleasant Ridge or whatever it is in Scarborough, which
Pleasant
was
Hill.
A nine-hole golf course before. And now, and that would be, you don't,
I
there's not a lot of greens keeping,
golf course.
You know, it's manageable greens keeping for a disc golf course. Yeah. So I'll just say it, but it is on the other side of town. No public transport in Milo yet. You know, the Hyperloop hasn't showed up yet.
Not yet.
Well, that's really cool, man. I had something that slipped out of my mind, but, not important. Awesome to see what you have done with your life, just straight up.
Appreciate that, man. It's always good to see you guys too, for sure. And I always keep up with you guys, what's going on in Milo and stuff. I saw Maddie rocking out on stage last weekend, and my brother will send me little snippets of stuff before I'm sure you guys even see it. So I'm always dying on the back end. So yeah, it's all love from over here.
And just
sure.
quick shout out to your brother, man.
Oh my fucking
what
God,
an awesome,
do I love him.
Awesome. Yeah, as a person, I pretty much knew that before, but like Matt said, just low key so funny, but also just video has just added so much. To have that level and quality of video in the arsenal is the kind of differentiation that's you have talked about carving PH's niche out of, and sort of the stamp of it. It's like that shit is becoming increasingly hard to make different, but at the same time becoming increasingly important. And god damn, has he been an asset and just 100%. A great energy to have around. Although he's not around much.
You guys set the tone with that video stuff though, man, because now it seems like everyone and their brother that is socially running the brewery has like video content and stuff. I mean, it could just be a massive coincidence.
It was going to come anyway.
That's how it goes.
But just awesome dude. But we got a three bay baby. I can't even remember what we did before. Not that it really matters.
Do you remember what your three bay was the first time around?
Yeah, I think it was Drake songs. Albums or something like that.
Shout out also to this man. You sent me Certified Lover Boy in like a Dropbox file before it came out. And you're like, this ain't even the podunk link. Check this shit out. It's audio quality.
Nah, you're safe.
It was
fucking
unbelievable. Just randomly sliding in from Cambosh 2 days early. I was pumped.
So, let's do PH items and or designs, which would be easier? Those are the ones you can free select.
Let's go. We can just do designs,
cool.
I think.
Cool.
It doesn't matter. Cool. Items.
So three PH designs and Pittsburgh, one of the only cities with the same colors for all the teams, which, frankly, I find pretty awesome. So I'll give you a great from three Pittsburgh teams. Is that cool? And however you want
to.
You might even – but asterisk, you can't do something that already has – like if you have a Willie Stargell shirt, you know, you can't – that doesn't count. So let's go – let's go Willie Stargell. Let's go. Who do you want from the Steelers, Maddie? Jerome Bettis?
I was a bus fan. I was a bus fan.
Bettis, the bus. And then let's go the mullet. Let's go Mario Lemieux.
Okay. Oh, man. It's tough. And I'm probably going to get roasted because I'm not a true Yinzer. I'm not a Pittsburgh born and raised. So. I'll start with Willie Stargell, and I'll do Were they? I don't recall if they were. What era did he play in?
Like the 70s.
What decade? So they did win, because I was going to say I was just going to give them the I feel like shit because they're always down in the dumps. That's like one of our flagship designs. But I guess necessarily it doesn't fix. I think they won maybe.
They won like
of
all
70s,
of them when he was there, like their last good run.
Yeah. Wow, man. Let's.
I give you a worse pirate.
I'm just going to have to give them. Yeah, give me that.
Let's do the tour guide attend the tour guide leader from when we took a tour of PNC Park.
Ooh.
Yeah, I touched the field. I was not allowed to touch the field.
And when he yelled at you, it felt like shit.
Yeah, I did.
There it is.
I did.
The alley-oop.
There it is. Yeah, just laid it up for you. Appreciate it. Lemieux. Let's do. We actually have a Dancing Gnome collab where we ripped off the Penguins.
I remember that as
I said
it.
And got a C&D
from the Penguins.
So
was that the first one?
Yeah, that was our first one. Also, they sent it to Dancing Gnome because we were nobody. But they sent it to DG and they were like, "Please remove this from your social handles. This was brought to our attention, like from an official."
Oh, that's
awesome.
That was super early on too, and I know Andrew Witchie, the owner of Dancing Gnome, was basically just like, if you guys get me in trouble for this, I'm going to fucking kill you.
It's like a drunk Mario Lemieux glass.
Yeah,
have you got any sense? Is that the only one?
Yeah, we got a scare from Guinness when we did the St. Patrick's Day.
Dude,
design.
I can't believe that's it. And I say that with clearly you're towing the line consciously towing the line in the right way. And I know nothing about how C&D.
We learned
work.
A lot from that. We learned a lot from the DG.
What was it on that was was too far?
Colorway. Yeah. Colorway associated with the team is huge. So that's why when we did the Trillium one, it was all in black and white.
I can't believe TB12's likeness isn't tied around that.
Yeah, it's definitely his likeness, but there's no official colorway, which is what we learned in that process. We could have still probably gotten in trouble, but it would have been more of an uphill. It would have been harder. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would have crushed us if they went to color.
I counter sue.
That's what I've learned. So the reducing or not having colorway associated with likeness for professional sports
makes
teams
sense.
That'll red flag instantly.
Cool.
So yeah, we got that, and then Bettis the bus. Let's go, man. I'm looking through our social for design stuff right now,
or even hypothetical design, because the bus could probably drink a lot of beer.
Oh my god, could he put it down?
He owns a steakhouse here in Pittsburgh. Oh,
that's fucking
too
fitting.
Yeah, so honestly, this is an announcement. Also, we have a project in the works with Pittsburgh Brewing Company, who makes Iron City. They're a brewery from 1861. Mm-hmm. That's going to be coming out in September this year, bringing it back to the city. The man's loyal to the city, the buses. Yep. So we'll finish
collab.
It with this this future collab with Pittsburgh Brewing Company.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah. So we're super stoked on that. They're opening a brand new state-of-the-art tap room facility. It got bought back. It was dormant for years and years. And they're still manufacturing out of Latrobe, where Rolling Rock was made. I think they've since moved in the past couple of years. But they're bringing the brewery tap room full show right back to Pittsburgh. So we're going to be a part of that launch month that they're going to be doing in September.
That's awesome.
Very excited about that.
I mean, few cities have that much of a city's beer. That was so apparent. Mm-hmm. Like this is the macro of this place. Mm-hmm. Like, very few have that local of
it's
one.
It's very cool.
Like Seattle has Rainier. Maybe that might be the closest thing. Texas has Lone Star, but other than there's not a few other really good examples that are just definitively no questions
the
asked.
Beer of the city.
And yeah, it's very like Eric's one request was a shirt from there, but there was no tap room to go to. We found one, and yeah, that's fucking awesome, dude. Can't wait to see more of that, and can't wait to see more of you. Hopefully, well, if you're not back here by then, I'll be back out there for my annual visit, because just talking about Pittsburgh makes me want to walk
them
bridges.
Hopefully, I'll be tagging along this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, come through, guys. I'll definitely be up for Jeff's wedding, too, later this year. So I know it's a little ways out, but I'll see you sooner rather than later for sure.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's absolutely great catching up with you, man. Yeah, love you to death, brother. And yeah, you're objectively inspiring.
Keep going, baby.
I appreciate you guys. Love you guys, too. Really good to see both you guys, as always. And hopefully the next time it's not through a screen and here in Pittsburgh. The flower that opens. I'm in the mood.